Welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. I'm Kate. I have a background in psychology and I have read all of Jane Austen. And I am joined by
Teresa. And I have a background in social work and I have read none of Jane Austen
except for the chapters we've read so far in this podcast.
We're going to talk about 53, 54, and 55 today. And just like Jane and Bingley, we have been rejoined and we are actually recording in the same room for the first time. So we'll see how this goes.
Hopefully it still works.
Yeah. Woo-hoo! So do you want to just dive right in? Tell me your thoughts on chapter 53.
Well, I really loved that chapter 53 started off kind of hearing a little bit from Wickham and from Lizzie. And just their interpretations of how the conversation between the two of them had gone. And we talked a lot about in last episode how Lizzie had dealt with Wickham in kind of the perfect way of dealing with a narcissist, that she caught him out on as many lies as she could. And then when he started to get angry, kind of let things go and was like, you know what? We don't have to deal with this. Let's just be friends. We don't have to talk about this. And Wickham left that conversation, and this first line just reads so perfectly. Mr. Wickham was so perfectly satisfied with this conversation that he never again distressed himself or provoked his dear sister Elizabeth. And I just wrote down, such a narcissist, because he thinks he won that conversation and he thinks things went his way. And I'm so grateful that Lizzie had the tact and the skill to be able to handle that. And I hate him so much.
I like in this that you basically see that Lizzie doesn't care about winning this conversation. She doesn't care if Wickham thinks that he's won. She was pleased to find she had said enough to keep him quiet. Like, her goal is just the boundary. She doesn't care what he actually is thinking.
Well, and as we continue to read on, we know that Wickham and Lydia are going to leave soon. So it's also kind of like, why waste your energy on this guy that you might not see again for a year, 2 years, 3 years? Who knows when you're going to see this guy next? It's just not worth her time and energy to put more into it. Had she not quieted him, though, I think it would have kept coming up and he would have kept trying to have that conversation.
He would have kept trying to basically get Lizzie on his side again.
Yeah, he would have been pulling out all his old tactics. And actually, I would imagine that at some point he probably would have creepily flirted with her. And she would have been like, you ran off with my sister and now you're married to her. Like, stop, you weird creep. I just envision that that's how that would go if Lizzie had handled it differently.
What did you think of Lydia's departure from her family?
Lydia continues to annoy me. Just this line of, my sisters may write to me, they will have nothing else to do. And how she talks about being a married woman, she's going to be so busy and so she can't write back to them. It's just so rude. When I think about Lydia, she's so one-minded and so self-centered that anything beyond her experience doesn't exist. To even imagine that other people might have a fulfilling life without being married or might have a full life without being married feels really hard for her. And so I wrote down, what an ass. And again, I had that feeling of, I'm sad that she's going to be away from her family for so long, and also not that sad she's going to be away from her family for so long.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote, fuck you, Lydia.
I have a lot of empathy for Lydia and her circumstances and the fact that she's 16,
but she's so inconsiderate. And I can excuse some things, but other times it's just like, you suck.
Yes, very much so. I know Wickham is the villain in this situation and in this book, but Lydia does not read as a likable character.
No, and I mean, I do think just because a character isn't likable doesn't mean we can't have empathy for them. And Lydia is a prime example of that.
Yeah, and I feel immense empathy for her. She's married the villain. It's not good. And she's just annoying. I was really interested in Mr. Bennett's response to them leaving, and I could not tell if he was being sarcastic or not about Wickham. I imagined it was in a really sarcastic tone, but just those lines of like, I am prodigiously proud of him. I defy even Sir William Lucas himself to produce a more valuable son-in-law. And I think it's sarcastic, but it's not explicitly said that he's being sarcastic in this.
No, but you have to remember that he is comparing Wickham to Collins, in that Sir William Lucas's son-in-law is Collins.
I had not put that together at all.
So he's saying, yeah, he's maybe a little more tolerable than Collins because he's charming and doesn't annoy me when he talks.
I had not put that together. So now the sarcasm comes through, right, and makes sense.
Yeah, that's Mr. Bennett. Everything that he says is sarcastic. But it's that double-edged sword of kind of like, is he being sarcastic or is he an asshole? Can't tell sometimes.
Well, and maybe both.
Yeah.
Well, I think often both.
Yeah,
his response to it and then Mrs. Bennett's response to it of being sad and withdrawn and having a hard time with Lydia being sent away. And there is even a line in here about Lydia being her favorite daughter. And it kind of comes out a little bit later that Jane's her favorite daughter because she's engaged to an even better man. But I do wonder, before Lydia got married, was Lydia the favorite?
Oh, 100% of Mrs. Bennett's, yes.
Yeah, I assumed Lydia was Mrs. Bennett's and Lizzie is Mr. Bennett's mm-hmm. favorite. And everyone else just sucks.
I think they both like Jane because Jane is just sweet and everybody likes Jane.
It's hard not to like Jane. But Jane also doesn't inspire being a favorite.
No, she doesn't really do anything to specifically put herself above any other in terms of her affection. She doesn't have particular affection for her father outside of, like, more than her mother or anything like that. The word that I underline in this interaction with Mrs. Bennett being, woe is me, and then Lizzie kind of being like, well, this is what happens when your daughters get married, is the consequence. And I just think it's really an interesting word for me, because Mrs. Bennett is someone who clearly doesn't understand boundaries and clearly doesn't understand consequences. She does not understand the consequences of her actions at all. And that speaks to the fact that she doesn't understand accountability either. I don't know. It was just one of those words where I was like, this is a good word to use here, because she doesn't understand it. And basically goes on after Lizzie says, like, this is what's going to happen when your daughters get married. They're going to leave home. And she's like, no, it's because she's moving so far away and your father won't let us be near her, and like just blows it out of proportion and doesn't understand the consequences of her actions in pushing Lydia towards something like this.
Well, in pushing all of her daughters towards something like this, I mean, Hunsford is not that close. And it wouldn't be like they would visit all that often if Lizzie had married Collins. And so her logic also just doesn't make any sense of, well, if they were closer, we'd see each other more. It's like, no, in that day and age, it wasn't the same as like, you can pull up your phone and FaceTime people.
Oh, she very much wanted Wickham to settle in Meryton. That was her plan. That's what she wanted. She was looking at houses and stuff that obviously these two could never afford. So in her mind, her plans have been shattered to pieces because of her husband's job. Again, do you not understand the fact that your daughter has to have money in order to live in this world? Your husband can't support another family. Like, it's just, again, that delusional perspective of not understanding consequences.
Well, and consequences of Wickham's and Lydia's earlier actions are that he is further away.
Yeah.
He had to leave the militia and join the regulars, who were far away because of all the stuff that's happened.
Yeah. And then Mr. Bingley returns.
I know. So sweet. I wrote, yay, when we heard that he was coming back, because I was really excited. And I'm just putting it out there, I've spent many a time saying I really want Jane and Bingley to still end up together. And here we are. They still end up together. So my little romantic heart is like, oh, things do work out sometimes. It's so nice. I feel good about that. I do think this exchange between Mr. and Mrs. Bennett about whether or not he's going to go and visit is just so frustrating. And I did write down that he's saying, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to go see this guy. It's not happening. But he did that last time too. And so there's also no trust in this when I'm reading it. Will he, won't he? I don't know, because he's just going to do whatever he wants to do and be damned everyone else. It doesn't matter.
So I underlined the word forced. You forced me into visiting him last year. No, actually, it's a request that was made of you because it's the polite thing to do. And Mrs. Bennet highlights for you again that this is the polite thing that you should be doing. And Mr. Bennet's just like, no, I don't want to do the polite thing. Didn't get me any further ahead last time. Just leave me alone so I can go sit with my books. And like, again, it's a perfect example of Mrs. Bennet being the one who's socially pushy and Mr. Bennet just ridiculously neglectful.
And I think in a better communicative relationship, they might balance each other out to like being able to toe that line of just socially acceptable enough. The issue is that these two don't communicate without fighting. And so everything becomes a fight. So they're never actually towing that line. It's like a tug of war, and whoever pulls the other one into the mud is who wins.
Oh yeah. These two very much care about winning.
Yeah, it's not about the proper social etiquette or what's best for their family or what's best for their children. It's about winning the fight. And so rather than balancing each other out, they are just pulling each other.
Yeah, but it turns out wasn't needed.
Yes, because Bingley himself makes his way with a friend, which is so exciting.
So I love Jane's little interaction where she's basically pretending she doesn't care. And then there's this little interaction. I wish I could say anything to comfort you, but it is wholly out of my power. You must feel it. That for me is Elizabeth just giving the whole validation to Jane of, I don't understand what you're going through. And I wish I could comfort you and I can't. You're going to have to go through this and I love you. And it's so validating. And I just love that little,
It's one of those moments where Jane Austen writes about what is real in that there isn't always something to say. Sometimes you just have to go through it and feel it. Not always a quick fix. Sometimes it's messy and it's hard and there's lots of things to feel. And I just love how grounded in reality that feels.
Mm-hmm. And then Darcy shows up with Bingley and Elizabeth gets up and she goes to the window. She looked. She saw Mr. Darcy with him and sat down again by her sister. She is feeling just as much anxiety as Jane now.
What I also loved is that Lizzie recognized Darcy right away and everyone else is like, who's that guy? Oh, it's what's his name? Like, we don't remember who this is, which just to me is so endearing that she's like, oh, I know exactly who that is. I need to sit down right now. And the rest of her family is just so oblivious to things.
Yeah. And then Mrs. Bennet is basically talking about how she's just going to be polite to Darcy. And fine, he's welcome here, but he's so proud. And you feel the impropriety. And there's a little piece of me that wonders if Elizabeth is also reflecting on the fact that she used to treat Darcy this way too. Not quite to this extreme, but that she thought of him this way.
Yeah, and I think the whole family kind of thinks of him in this way. Maybe not Jane, because we know Jane thinks the best of everyone and is sweet and kind about everything. But no one knows what's going on with him and Lizzie.
Not even Jane.
Yeah, which I actually found really surprising when it was written that Lizzie hadn't even told Jane about the contents of Mrs. Gardner's letter, because I felt pretty convinced they were going to talk about it and that Jane would be her confidant, especially because although it was related to her and Darcy, I was just surprised that she didn't share with Jane, hey, so Mr. Darcy paid for Lydia's arrangement and has done all of this. Can we just talk about that or have that be something that's known between the two of us? I was really surprised that Lizzie hadn't told Jane at least about that part.
But Jane doesn't even really know that much about their interaction at Pemberley and at Lambton. So it's even in here that Jane just assumes that this is a man who is coming that Lizzie has rejected. And that's why it's awkward. She doesn't get that it's like, no, actually, I love him now.
And he maybe loves me, but I don't know. It's a little strange.
I think this is also one of those things where it keeps the tension going. Because if Lizzie had told Jane, imagine if you were relaying this story to me about someone who had spent $100,000 to make sure that your family was safe and secure. And you were like, I'm not sure if he loves me. My response would be, of course they do. Of course they love you. What planet are you on? People don't do that. They love you. So I think it keeps the tension going because it keeps Lizzie in this state of doubt.
Well, and it's this state of doubt and also a little bit of this like isolated state. Lizzie's just in her head this entire time trying to be like, does he like me? He doesn't like me. No, I'm not going to think about him. He doesn't approach me. Then it's all done. It's all out the window. It's fine. I loved this like really poetically written piece. The color which had been driven from her face returned for half a minute with an additional glow, and a smile of delight added luster to her eyes as she thought of that space of time that his affection and wishes must still be unshaken. Just that description is so vivid to me. I read it and you can almost feel it. You know, you can feel the butterflies. You can feel those feelings of like, oh, but he must still love me. No, I'm not going to let myself have that.
And then we get into Lizzie sort of in that internal waiting space. Let me first see how he behaves. She's putting this on Darcy to be the one who makes the first move.
Which, as we know, Darcy is like so socially anxious and so introverted. I don't know if he ever will. And I know they eventually figure it out and end up together. But this is the type of stuff that would end up on a like missed connections forum.
I think Lizzie is very much thinking of Darcy as she knew him in at Pemberley and at Lambton, and when he was more casual and himself. And she's realizing that he's back to old Darcy in that he's shy and awkward and standoffish and stern.
Knowing what we know of Darcy now and that he has the capability to do both, I also envision from his perspective how difficult this situation must be. Mrs. Bennet's being an ass.
And she's being super over welcoming to Bingley.
He's amongst the family of the person he loves, whom I'm sure he wants to make a good impression on, but is probably very socially anxious about. He's also with Lizzie, who he really likes. And I kept envisioning when Darcy came to sit with Lizzie in Hunsford, and he would just sit there in silence with her and be like, this was lovely. Like, I just envision him having those moments where he's in the same room with her and he's like, okay, it's fine, that's enough, without actually realizing how much the other stuff matters, and the openness and letting his walls down a little bit would be a connection.
I think he knows that now, though. I think he's learned enough of his lesson that he knows until he has told her how he's feeling, sitting in the same room with her in silence isn't enough.
Do you think he's fully learned that?
Let's face it, there's going to be a lot of silences in their future, but they're going to be comfortable silences. I think Darcy now knows that nothing's going to move forward with Lizzie unless he actually can express it.
Rather than assuming things, he needs to actually explicitly say things and verbally express himself.
This is where I think the comedy comes in, is that he is probably waiting for her to make the first move. Because if you think about it, she rejected him, so he's probably not going to be willing to risk himself again until he is secure of her affection.
Well, and she has really only very minimally made any expressions of her affection. Like, they've had some nice conversations, but at no point has she been like, oh, I'm really into you, or I'm even kind of thinking about being into you at some point in some time.
They've shared some glances at this point and like nice conversation.
But what we know is Darcy can't read social cues. So those glances, he's probably just like, she's staring at me with dead eyes because she hates me and she turned down my marriage proposal. He's probably reading something very different into it because he can't read those social cues in that way.
Well, and this is basically what they're doing. These two are just watching each other and looking at each other every so often. Lizzie is watching him and he looks at her every so often and looks at Jane every so often and then just stares out into space.
Yeah, it's the most awkward situation. It makes me think of Darcy hiding in bushes. I'm awkward and weird. Well, there you are. Peek out from the bush. Back in the bush. Awkward and weird.
See, I actually interpret this as he is looking at Elizabeth, getting some internal data, then looking off and processing it and being like, does she like me? I can't tell. What does that look mean? Maybe I should look again. I can't tell. There's not enough there. She's very pretty. She's so pretty. Let me think about that for a while. I'm just going to stare off into space. Oh, conversation. Bingley, how are you? Just very internally in his head, thinking about all of the things and not really present at all.
Both of them are. Mm-hmm. I don't think either one of them would be a particularly good conversationalist.
And they're not. Lizzie is not really talking. She can't look at Darcy sometimes when things are mentioned. She's so embarrassed by her mother.
I'm embarrassed by her mother for her.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what else there is to say. It's painful. Jane.
She's still trying to kind of play it cool. Well, he's a really nice guy, and maybe he never actually really liked me. We could just be friends. Like, he's just a generally nice, friendly guy. Yeah. Jane's doing what Jane does and rationalizing away difficult feelings for niceties and thinking the best of everyone rather than being like, dude, you were in love with me and then you left. She should be a little angry. If I was Jane, I'd be a little angry. And I'd probably also still be very excited. And he's come back and the person I love and all of those feelings. But I'd probably hold a little bit more of a grudge than Jane does.
What did you think about Mrs. Bennet bringing up Wickham?
Oh, I was so frustrated with it. And she essentially tries to boast about him and how he's the greatest thing ever. And I'm just like, cool, we don't care. No one in this room cares. And again, it's that out of touch with reality experience, because this part about, oh, you must have seen the wedding announcement in the paper. My brother took care of it and it wasn't very good, but it was there. I just think about all the gossip that had been already spreading. Like, yeah, they're married, but everyone knows how this happened.
That's also part of the reason that it was written the way it was written and her father wasn't mentioned, was to protect the rest of the family. And then she goes on to say, he has some friends, because she's making a dig at Darcy. I don't know for you, but this interaction makes me love Darcy even more, because Darcy had to know that this was what he was walking into and he still did it.
I think this speaks to the Darcy who proposed and said, your family's shit, but I can deal with it because I love you so much. And he's proving it. This is Mrs. Bennet at her worst, and he's handling it.
He's not being Bingley and sociable and leaning into her, but he's being neutral.
Yes.
It sparks Lizzie to speak up, and then Mrs. Bennet shoots the foot again, and Lizzie's in misery, and then she tries to invite them for supper, and they're like, yeah, no, we gotta go.
Yeah, not tonight. This has been awkward enough as it is. And I just envision them going on their ride home, being like, how do we go back for dinner, but make sure she's not there?
Oh, yeah.
Can we invite her to someone else's house and have her not be there? Because I don't think Bingley likes her either. Like, Bingley's sociable and pleasant to everyone.
Yes, he is tolerant.
But I don't know if anyone's enjoying this interaction, except for Mrs. Bennet.
Well, and then we move on. We have this interaction with Jane before they come for dinner. What are your thoughts on Lizzie's thoughts and then Jane kind of coming in and pretending she doesn't care about Bingley?
This line of Mr. Darcy's behavior astonished and vexed her. I agree. As a reader, I'm a little frustrated because we've got 4 chapters left for them to figure this shit out. And I want them to have figured it out by now. And I didn't expect Darcy to show up at the house and like wrap his arms around her and twirl her around. That's not them. But I did expect him and her to form at least some connection. And this just feels awkward and stilted and was silent and grave and indifferent. And she's questioning, why did he come? Why is he here? And I also am kind of like, yeah, if you're not going to make a move, Jude, why are you here? What's the point? This is not a good move.
Teasing man.
Yeah, it feels unfair. I feel cheated as a reader of them having more cute moments together. I want more cute moments. And we don't get that in any of these chapters, really.
What do you think about Jane basically saying that she's indifferent to the acquaintance?
I mean, she's a liar and a bad one at it. But one of my favorite lines, and I think it might be my favorite, is just this one from Lizzie when Jane is like, it's totally fine. You know, I'm not going to fall back in love with him. Don't think of me as weak, be in danger of that now. And just Lizzie's response of, I think you are in very great danger of making him as much in love with you as ever. No. If he doesn't fall in love with you again, there's something wrong with him. And it's just this lovely sisterly bond moment that just puts a smile on my face. So I just really appreciated that connection again between the two of them. And then we get to Tuesday. They come back for dinner.
Supper.
Yes, and it's very kind of them to do so, but gosh, what an awkward dinner to have to come to. And I do appreciate that there is other people there to act as buffers, that they've invited other people to dinner on Tuesday to round out the table. And it's sweet that Lizzie's paying special attention to Bingley and Jane mm-hmm. to see kind of where is this going. And the moment of Bingley choosing his seat and Mrs. Bennett's trying to really orchestrate it, that he sit next to her. And just this line of Jane happened to look around and happened to smile. It was decided, is just so sweet. As soon as she smiled, he was like, nope, I'm going over there. And that puppy energy that Bingley often brings, I had that feeling in this moment of like, he's just going to follow his heart and that's where he wants to sit. Granted, he does kind of maybe look at Darcy.
So this is my puppy dog moment, is she would have imagined that Bingley had received his sanction to be happy had she not seen his eyes likewise turn towards Mr. Darcy with an expression of half laughing alarm. Bingley sat down next to Jane and went, ha, 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 I'm sitting here, Darcy.
Is it okay? Can I do this?
And it's just so cute of the beta looking to the alpha to be like, it's okay if I sit here, right? I just love it.
And there's part of me that reads that and thinks, this is Mr. Bingley's, I don't care what you say, Darcy, this is my life, this is what I'm choosing. And that feels really nice. Also, because Darcy has been his old self, I did write down here, don't meddle, Darcy. Just let them do their thing. Don't get in the way again. Because I'm not fully convinced that he won't.
Biting my tongue. What did you think of Darcy in this chapter?
I was a little sad that they sat very far away from each other and that he had to sit next to Mrs. Bennett. Felt very sad for him. But also, he's not being super sociable. So whatever. Sit next to her and suffer.
So you're a little mad at Darcy?
I'm a little mad. Again, I just want them to be in love. I want the love to have started. And I want to know what happens after. I think this is why I don't do great with romance novels, because it always just ends with like, and then they were together. It's like, yeah, but what happens after they're together? Like, relationships aren't just about getting together. It's long and presumably the person they're going to be with for the rest of their life. What's that going to be like? There's no sequel to this. So other than fan fiction, it's all I got. So I need them to be in love now.
I like Lizzie, again, sort of having this back and forth with herself about Darcy and his feelings. And then she says, if he does not come to me, then I shall give him up forever. The gentleman came.
Right? It's just so poignant. And also, I was like, are you really going to give him up forever? I don't know if this is done for you, Lizzie, if he doesn't show up for dinner one night. I think the feelings will still remain.
This is a little bit of that sort of anxious attachment. Not that Lizzie is necessarily anxiously attached, but it is that sort of anxious anxiety love of kind of, they don't do what I want. I'm never going to love them. Why aren't they coming? That's the feeling that's here.
Yeah. And I can just imagine the waiting that day for everyone to show up and just the anticipation of that building and almost having to set a boundary within yourself to not have that anxiety overflow. It'll be fine. If it doesn't happen, then I'm done. This is it. And just setting that hard line, which might not be true, but in that moment is a way to soothe some of that anxiety.
So Darcy does come over to her, kind of. There's ladies who get in his way. The girls move closer to her than ever and started to whisper to Elizabeth. The men shan't come and part us. I am determined. We want none of them, do we? And my note is just, me.
Well, I love that your note is me, because I wrote two things. I wrote, but we do, because I want Darcy to come over and be with Lizzie. But then I also write, also be queer. Like, it's just such a, I don't think it's intended as a queer moment, but it's very much that, like, yeah, we don't want men in our lives. We're perfectly happy without them right now. That, like, just feels very queer to me. And I'm like, gosh, maybe that person should have ended up with Charlotte. And I appreciate that that happens. And Darcy's like, all right, I guess I'm going over here now and I'm going to go stand in this corner.
I love this transition in this chapter. I know you're like, Darcy and Elizabeth better talk. This is the chapter where Lizzie starts to be the creepy starer.
Yes.
Lizzie, she followed him with her eyes, envied everyone whom he spoke to, and scarcely patience enough to help anybody to coffee. She is obsessively watching him.
It makes me think about particularly those initial stages of infatuation where you're almost tethered to the person by an invisible line and you just know exactly where they are in the room at all times, and you find yourself catching yourself watching them and you don't quite mean to, but you can't take your eyes off of them. It's all of those feelings.
I think it's interesting though that we don't get the impression that she's catching Darcy's eye. So I think Darcy has that tethered feeling and he probably knows where she is at every single moment in time, but he's gotten over staring.
At least we think he has. I imagine he's sneaking some glances in there that we're not catching.
Yeah, but you know, in the past chapters, Lizzie will catch Darcy staring at her. I think this is going to be much more of Darcy catching Elizabeth staring at him.
Yes.
It's just such an interesting like twist and turn and shift from that original Darcy being the one who's the creeper, and now Lizzie's the one who's being the creeper.
Well, and I wonder, because when Darcy would do that, Lizzie was always just like, why is this creepy man staring at me? I wonder what Darcy's interpretation is of catching Lizzie staring at him. Is it a, oh, maybe there's something here, does she like me? Or is it a, she must hate me so much that she's like sending daggers through her eyes at me?
Well, I think Darcy is like, I have to talk to her. So he brings his coffee mug back to be like, more coffee, please, just so he can have an interaction with her. And they're such awkward turtles.
So awkward. So, so awkward. Lizzie being like, how's your sister?
It's like when they met at Pemberley and he asked her four times how her family was.
And I think it does say in here that she already asked about his sister at some point earlier. I'm pretty sure. So she's doing the same thing of like, what's a safe topic for us to talk about? Mm-hmm. And I will say, I did find it a little sad that she's at Pemberley by herself until Christmas. I just feel Georgiana's life must be so lonely.
Yeah, probably. That's not uncommon, but I also don't think this trip was planned.
No, I think he was like, cool, Bingley, let's go to Netherfield. Huh? You want to do that together?
And this again sparks my questioning of how much has Darcy told his sister about why he's going?
And I know you think that he talks to her quite a bit about things. We've discussed a little bit that he has. I don't know if he would talk all that in depth about like, I'm going to go so I can win the heart of the woman I love. I think he'd probably be like, we've got some business there. I might see Elizabeth Bennet. We'll see how that goes. I don't think he would be so explicit of like, I am going because I love her and I need to be with her. I'd be interested to know the conversation about when he went to London.
Bet he said nothing.
Yeah, probably because it would scar her to hear about Wickham and bring that up. And he'd just be like, I have business, which is not uncommon for him to go to London for business, I'm sure.
Plus, I get the impression that Georgiana probably has to do a lot of interpreting between the lines of when he says things. So their communication, that's another fanfic we can write at a different time.
Definitely.
Yeah. And then they just kind of stand there awkwardly. And then I like to imagine it's the same girl from before coming over and being like, whispering things and separating her from Darcy.
I imagine that whoever that woman is doesn't like Darcy and it's like, oh, I'm saving Lizzie from this awkward interaction. Let me go whisper in her ear about something random. Oh, the fruit tree over there looks lovely. Like something very strange that has nothing to do with anything, but just to be like, I'm here to save you, Lizzie, from this awkward interaction. Mm-hmm. Which I also imagine others look looking in on what this interaction is are probably like, wow, they look really awkward right now. I'm gonna go save Lizzie. This feels weird.
Right. And then Darcy gets stuck with Mrs. Bennet again. He has to play whist. And I love this line that they're sitting down for cards. And she had nothing to hope but that his eyes were so often turned towards her side of the room as to make him play as unsuccessfully as herself. She is watching him.
Yeah. Well, she's watching him, but she's also like, she can't focus. She's in love.
Oh yeah, it's so cute.
And then everyone goes home.
Oh, I love this though. Mrs. Bennet had designed to keep the two gentlemen to supper, but their carriage was unluckily ordered before any of the others. She had no opportunity of detaining them. And I just wrote, planned?
Oh, most definitely. They were smart to get out of there. Also, I just love this language of detaining them. It wasn't inviting them to stay, keeping them around, entertaining them. No, detaining them. They must stay. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me so much of on the last ball where they were the last ones there for a good half hour waiting for their carriage and just how awkward that was. And so they're like, we're not going to repeat that awkward situation. We're going to be smart and get our carriage here now.
Well, I also wonder, and this is again, just my own like internal thing of Darcy basically bargaining with Bingley of, I will go to the supper with you, but here is my time limit. We have to be the first to leave. We're telling them to order our carriage right after cards, and very much having boundaries around the fact that he's gonna go with Bingley, but
he doesn't want to get stuck with Mrs. Bennet. And they've also already just sat all dinner together
and cards. Poor Darcy. Yeah. Come on, Mrs. Bennet, why can't you have the same strategy that you had before? Why are you sacrificing yourself? You don't like him.
Right. It's very strange that she's like, I guess I'll sit next to this guy and annoy him all night. Just very strange. And then Mrs. Bennet goes into this long diatribe about how lovely dinner was and how everyone said so and blah, blah, blah. And all I wrote was just so insecure. She talks like such an insecure person who needs to really be boasting and building up her mm-hmm. own self-confidence through outward reward. Everyone else loves me, so I must be okay.
Oh, yeah.
And just, oh, I felt so bad for her and also so annoyed with her all at the same time.
Yeah, Mrs. Bennet's character, there's a ton of insecurity in there and so much projection.
So much.
And then Jane goes back into denying things
and being like, he's just a nice guy. Nice guys are nice to everyone. Okay, Jane, sure.
And I like that Lizzie, it basically shuts this down. She's like, I can't have this conversation with you anymore if you're going to pretend to be indifferent. Forgive me. And if you persist in indifference, do not make me your confidant. She's like, I will make you smile. I will make you love him. I can't be the one. If you're going to claim to be indifferent, don't talk to me.
Yeah, love that. And then we move further that Bingley comes back by himself this time. So no Darcy. We learn that Darcy's gone to London
for 10 days.
Which, okay, why'd he come for like 4 and back to London? Makes no sense.
I'm biting my tongue.
Okay. And I appreciate that he continues to come to dinner, even though he's like, I can't tonight. Probably because he doesn't want to spend more time with Mrs. Bennet that day, but I guess I can tomorrow. And I love that he shows up on time and Mrs. Bennet's her regular self and is like, Jane, get down here. No one else get down here. Just Jane. And Jane's like, no, I'm going to wait for my sisters. This moment where Mrs. Bennet's winking at Lizzie and Kitty, and Kitty's like, what is wrong with you? Do you have an eye twitch? Do you need something from me? Stop winking at me. I don't understand. I just love that Kitty is so bold about it. Why are you winking at me? Her mom's like, I'm not winking at you. What are you talking about? And then 30 seconds later gets up and is like, Kitty, I need to talk to you. Please leave the room. And I just wrote down, oh, you're so smooth, Mrs. Bennet. No one will ever pick up on what you're trying to do. It's just so, so horrible.
There's so much secondhand embarrassment when she does these things.
So much.
So much secondhand embarrassment. I mean, that's what her children are feeling. Her children are feeling the embarrassment that she's not feeling. No. But I just imagine Bingley sitting in that situation and basically watching Mrs. Bennet wink at Kitty and Lizzie and being like, looking at Jane and being like, it's worth it. It really is. And then looking back and she's still winking and he's like, this is just so weird.
Well, and I imagine she's not a subtle winker either. I imagine she winks like I wink, which is not good.
You mean with both eyes?
Yes. Just blinking really hard at everyone.
And then she calls Lizzie from the room and Lizzie was forced to go. And she basically gets into the hallway and she's like, yeah, we're going to leave them alone, Lizzie.
Which also, I assume, is not proper in this time that she's leaving her daughter with a man in a room alone. Is that okay etiquette?
So no, but yes. Around this time, proposals start to shift a little bit and consent from the female is considered more proper before going to the parents and getting consent. So there does need to be a private moment so that Bingley can propose to Jane, but also at this time it's improper for them to be alone.
Yeah, so it's that weird gray area. Both are true.
Right, but also if he does something while they're alone and they get caught kissing, it's also then proper for him to propose. There's so much weaving etiquette in all of the alone and together. You can't be caught alone, but also that's how you propose, but also just, yeah,
it's very intricate.
Yes,
I appreciate that Lizzie just waits in the hallway until her mom and Kitty are out of the way and is like, all right, I'm going back in there, this is weird. And we all know this is weird because our mom made it really weird.
Mm-hmm. And Bingley doesn't propose.
I just think that that is really interesting. But Mrs. Bennet's forcing it so much. And he's like, nope, there's going to be the right moment. Yeah. I'm going to wait for the moment.
Yeah.
This is not it.
He wants it to be more natural and not this sort of presumed thing.
Also, they've seen each other like 3 times since a year ago when they last saw each other.
Yeah.
In very awkward situations. It feels a little hasty for him to be proposing at this point if he was.
Yeah. And Jane stops pretending that she's indifferent.
Which I really like. I like that Jane lets herself be a little more free.
I mean, free, but they're not talking about Bingley.
True.
And Lizzie's still a little bit worried that Darcy's going to come back and stop Bingley.
Which I am too. It does feel a little bit like there's a ticking clock on this.
Right, he's got 10 days.
We know where Darcy is. And I imagine in Lizzie's brain also there being a little bit of, he has 10 days to make this decision and he better make the right decision, and just how to orchestrate that without being her mother.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I want to matchmake without forcing this.
Yeah. If this is meant to be, I don't want Darcy coming in and getting in the way and screwing things up. But also, I don't want to be my mother who is also going to screw things up in another way.
And then Bingley and Mr. Bennet, they shoot and they spend the morning together.
Which I wonder what they talk about on that excursion.
Mr. Bennet found the latter was much more agreeable than his companion expected. Mr. Bennet is surprised by how much he likes Bingley.
Which to me is like, again, how out of touch are you? He spent enough nights with this guy to have some sense of who he is. So the fact that he was like, I don't know if I like this guy, just feels so out of touch again.
But there's nothing that came up that he could tease Bingley about, nothing he could ridicule him about, nothing that made him want to be quiet. And I like this. He was more communicative and less eccentric than the other had ever seen him. So Mr. Bennet's also making a really good impression on Mr. Bingley.
It feels like it would be a very nice outing for the two of them.
And then they have dinner and basically it works out that everybody is out of the room and
with a little less winking for Mrs. Bennet.
Yeah. Lizzie's like, fine, I have to go write a letter. I'll go write a letter. And then she returns from her letter and they are running very close to each other.
Dun, dun, dun!
Their situation was awkward enough, but her, she thought, was still worse.
And in that, is she referring to her walking in on them or her situation with Darcy and how awkward that is?
No, her walking in on them.
Which is fair. I think it is often more embarrassing for the person who does the walking in versus the people who get walked in on. Because you feel like you're interrupting a private moment, which you are, and it's awkward.
I still love that the most awkward thing that has happened is she walked in on a conversation that they were having, and they were standing close and speaking earnestly,
talking to each other.
Oh no.
And then Bingley kind of gets up and says something to Jane and then runs out of the room, which, how awkward. And Jane acknowledged with the liveliest emotion that she was the happiest creature in the world.
Yeah.
Which is just so sweet that she's so happy. And also just the sentiment of, oh, why is not everybody as happy? Jane is so happy, but also is like, oh, everyone should get to feel this. This feels so good. This should be shared universally. Again, how do you not like Jane? She's so nice.
She's so sweet. She's so happy. She's made her family happy. She's marrying the man that she loves. She's engaged. It all worked out. She is overflowing with joy, which is sweet because Jane's not a character that you see overflowing with joy very often. Jane is positive, but not necessarily joyful. She sees the good in people. She's an optimist. But Jane actually spent a good part of this book being depressed.
Oh yeah, she spent all that time in London being like, I'm sad. Why has he not come to visit me? She's just sad. I appreciate that Bingley goes, he gets permission from Mr. Bennet, and then he has this moment with Lizzie. And I just love that they shake hands, which just feels
like a hug.
It is, but no. It feels so intimate and warm in a we're peers, we're equals type of way. Because I imagine there wasn't a lot of handshaking in this time period that would happen, particularly between men and women on that level. And it just feels like setting them up on even footing.
And we're both excited by this decision, and we both like each other, and like, we're both happy in this moment.
Yeah. And I love that when the two of them are without each other, they both gravitate to Lizzie.
Oh yeah.
Which I just find to be really endearing.
In the absence of Jane, he always attached himself to Elizabeth for the pleasure of talking of her. And when Bingley was gone, Jane constantly sought the same means of relief. Which, there's a little part of me when I read that that's like, aw, that's sweet. And then there's a little part of me that's poor Elizabeth, who's longing for Darcy and has to sit with these two being like, oh my God, I'm so in love.
But also, it's not like the two of them have a ton of other options. Lizzie's really the only level-headed, sane one in this house that they can spend some time with.
What did you think of Mr. Bennet's congratulations to Jane?
I think it's interesting that he doesn't talk about it until Bingley leaves. And then he's like, good for you, Jane. You're going to be happy. It's very interesting to me. And I actually, part of me is wondering, what was the dowry conversation like? She ain't got no dowry.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if some of that is playing through his mind.
I very much think that he likes Bingley because Bingley didn't ask for anything. He just asked for permission. Well, actually, at this point, Jane's over 21. He doesn't legally need it, but
it's easier. Still the nice thing to do.
So I'd like that he's sarcastic, but your tempers are by no means unlike. You are each of you so complying that nothing will ever be resolved on, so that every servant will cheat you, and so generous will that you will always exceed your income. And Jane's like, I really hope not. Imprudence is not something that I value. I get that you're being sarcastic, but no. And then her mom goes on about how much money Bingley has. But I think it's sweet, even though he's being sarcastic and a bit of a douchey guy, he is talking about the fact that they are both really sweet, generous people with similar values. And he recognizes why Jane likes this guy.
He recognizes that Jane has picked a good partner. And it kind of gets contrasted, just this line of Wickham, Lydia, we're all forgotten.
Yes.
And just how different those relationships are.
I also think that the fact that Mary and Kitty are starting to like ask for things is, again, Jane and Bingley are going to be sweet and going to do those things. Wickham and Lydia never would.
And Wickham and Lydia also would never have the opportunity to be right. able to offer anything.
But if Lydia had money, she wouldn't be spending it on her sisters.
No, she would be the type of person who would come home with really lavish gifts but then guilt you into feeling like she's done you a favor by bringing them to you.
I also think that it's really interesting that her younger sister soon began to make interest with her for objects of happiness. And then it talks about Mary and Kitty asking for things. And it's a really interesting thing in there that Lizzie's not asking for anything, which means in Jane's eyes, Elizabeth isn't her younger sister. She's her peer.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't put that together. I guess for me, I think about like they had been asking for objects for happiness versus Lizzie doesn't need a material thing to make her happy.
She's just happy that Jane's happy.
Yeah, she's just happy that Jane's happy, and she needs Darcy to make her happy.
Yes.
Which Jane cannot give her.
And then we find out that Bingley didn't know that Jane was in London, as you suspected.
Well, and we did find that out earlier. Darcy did tell Lizzie,
but Jane didn't know. And I like that Lizzie's just like, I suspected as much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seems accurate. And I appreciate that Jane goes on to kind of contextualize what has happened and how she gets it, that Bingley's sisters kind of screwed her over and were jerks. And just this line of, that is the most unforgiving speech, said Elizabeth, that I ever heard you utter. And Jane's still being very nice in this, but there is that moment of like, oh, Jane's going to be okay because she'll stand up for herself.
I don't know if it's so much that Jane is going to stand up to them and that's what Elizabeth is applauding her for. Jane isn't going to fall back in love with Miss Bingley and Mrs. Hurst. She understands that they don't like her and she's not going to fall for their false sweetness, but she's still Jane and is like, well, we'll be friends. We just won't be best friends anymore. That's the most unforgiving speech that Jane has ever given, is like, I'm not going to be their best friend. We'll still be friends, but not that close.
It is very couched in Jane's sweetness. But it is nice to see that even Jane, who tries to see the best light for everything, can be like, okay, you screwed me over. This does change things. And it does change my perspective of you.
Yeah, he made a little mistake to be sure, but it is to his credit of modesty. I like that Lizzie is forgiving Bingley. I also think it's really funny. Like, I guess my brain goes to like, Darcy's made some pretty big fucking mistakes. So like, it makes sense that Lizzie's like, yeah, Bingley didn't make that big a mistake. It's just a little mistake. It's okay. He came back.
Because there's some bigger mistakes happening with the guy I love. And so it's going to have to be fine.
And Bingley didn't sell out Darcy.
No, which I thought was really sweet. And Lizzie kind of clocks it too, of like, oh, he could have said, hey, Darcy told me that I shouldn't marry you because here are all the horrible things. Granted, I think Bingley's a lot smarter than Darcy and knows that starting a marriage proposal with here's everything wrong with you and your family isn't really the way to go. So I think some of it might just be that Bingley's a little bit smarter, but it is nice that he doesn't also say like, and my friend was telling me not to marry you. And it does make me wonder, does Bingley know how Darcy feels about Lizzie?
Right.
Have they talked about that? Have they had that conversation?
Has he told Bingley that he's proposed in the past?
I imagine no. One, because it's embarrassing for Darcy. And two, I feel like it would make Darcy feel like he's such a hypocrite of like, hey, Bingley, I told you not to marry that girl because here are all the things that are wrong. So I'm going to marry her sister.
What do you think would have happened to their friendship if Lizzie had said yes?
Oh, it would have been horrible.
Right?
I don't know if they'd ever talk again. Although maybe Bingley would have then just been like, cool, I'm going to propose to the sister. If you can get over it, I can get over it.
Yeah. And then everyone's happy. I like that Lizzie basically says, if there were 40 Bingleys, I would never be as happy as you. Because she doesn't love Bingley.
Right. She's like, I don't want that.
Even though he's a great guy. And I like that she's kind of joking that maybe another Collins will pop into her life and like, fine, I'll be like Charlotte and I'll just settle down so that I have somewhere. She's shifting into that sort of like resentment phase of love because it's unrequited. At least that's how it's feeling for her. That little end interaction. Interesting.
Yeah, I do too. I think it is a little bit of a comedic moment too, where as the reader, you're like, she's not going to end up with Collins. Come on. After all of this, she's got her sights set. We know what's going to happen. And so it is a little funny that she's like, well, you know, maybe Collins would be fine at this point. Mm-hmm. And granted, I really hate Collins. So there's part of me that's like, if that's what happens, I'm burning this book. Don't think that's what happens, but it is an interesting interesting end to it that she's like, well, maybe.
Okay. Any final thoughts on things?
I don't have any additional thoughts. I think if I'm making my predictions, 6 chapters left. 6 chapters for them to fall in love and for me to hear about their love. I want that part of it. I don't think I'm going to get it, but I want it. Because if the last page is like, and then they kissed and they were in love, I'd be like, I hate you, Jane Austen. I hate you so much. Because it's just like, you spent half a book telling me about all this useless crap that I don't care about. Just for them to kiss on the last page? No, I want more.
Okay.
So stay tuned to see if I hate Jane Austen by the end of this book. I think that's my only prediction. I guess I will, hopefully we will see Jane and Bingley actually get married in this. So I at least get some happy ending if the last page is just a kiss or a reproposal, whatever it is. I'm gonna be mad sad. I think I'm also just sad that we're coming to the end, you know.
Aww.
I want there to be more.
It's a good book then.
Yeah, it's been good. I've been enjoying it. Do you have a favorite quote?
So I like, he simpers and smirks and makes love to us all, just because it's such a famous line. I mean, I love the like Lizzie being the creeper now and following Darcy around. She was in no humor for conversation with anyone but himself, and to him she hardly had courage to speak, which is like,
so sweet.
I think the line that just sticks out, it's not even a full line, but that his eyes were so often turned towards her side of the room as to make him play as unsuccessfully as herself. I just love that sort of like imagery of the two of them being awkward turtles in a room and just basically playing cards and not catching each other's glances and looking at each other at opposite times. And it's that very comedic sort of staging of them looking and the other looking away when the other one looks and then looking, and like it just feels really super sweet and super cute.
I love that moment too.
What's your favorite quote?
I think my favorite quote is this one that Lizzie says that I already read out of, but it's, I think you are in very great danger of making him as much in love with you as ever. It's just very sweet. And because we get a good resolution of they've posed and they're both very happy, it feels very knowing. I know you've talked about upcoming chapters being these ones as your favorite. Are there still more to come that are still favorite chapters?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So we're like in the start of the favorite chapters, or have we not reached that?
So I'd say 58 is probably my favorite chapter. I mean, there's basically these last ones they're great. They're amazing. I think you're gonna just fall even more in love.
Excellent. We like that.
Yeah.
So next episode, what are we reading?
We're gonna read 56, 57, and 58. I'm dragging this out a little bit.
So are you gonna leave me on a cliffhanger though?
No, you're not gonna be left on a cliffhanger.
Okay. So that will be our next 3 chapters. And I guess we'll go from there. I'm excited. Again, it's bittersweet because we're coming to the end.
There is more Jane Austen to read.
Yes.
When do you want to announce our next book?
Maybe at the end of next episode, we will announce our next book. I think we've already hinted at it.
Or maybe we've mentioned it and I just might have
mentioned it. But we'll announce our next book at the end of next episode. We likely will do an episode based on the movie and the miniseries.
There's lots to watch.
Yeah, there's lots still out there to watch and to engage with in the Pride and Prejudice realm. So we will stay in this realm for a little bit. Bit longer.
We may have it be that we will do some of those movies and miniseries, because there's many interspersed.
Keep Pride and Prejudice alive and in our heart. So if people want to follow us on social media, we'll also make sure that it gets announced on social media what our next book is going to be. You can follow us at Austen Therapy Podcast on Instagram. You can also follow Kate's meme account at Austen Therapy on Instagram. We really appreciate when people give us feedback and comments on there. Everyone's been really nice and really sweet.
And I also wanted to give a little shout out to Stitches and Seeds, who helped us with some pronunciation of Derbyshire, which maybe I'm still pronouncing wrong, but appreciate that people are listening along and giving us feedback. And thank you so much for coming along. We love you all, and we will see you next time.
Bye.